When my children were small, some friends of mine gave them a small dog. It was the personal dog of my friends, but they were beginning to travel and could no longer care for it, so they gave it to my children. It was a small, cute, white, friendly dog. He became an intimate part of our family for years until the day he died of dog old age. I did not then, and I do not now, know much about dogs. I had a Cocker Spaniel when I was a kid. I knew what a German Shepherd looked like, but I had no idea what kind of dog had been given to my children. As far as I was concerned, it was just another mutt that my kids loved. Its value was what it meant to them. If something happened to it, I knew it would break their hearts, but no, my attitude was we could replace it with another dog without a lot of expense. If for some reason we wanted to get rid of it, we would have, like our friends, to find somebody to give it to as a pet or to give it to the Humane Society. I just didn't think the dog was very valuable. I was wrong about the value of that dog. Come to find out, it was a pedigreed Chihuahua worth a great deal of money. Could it be that our estimate of the value of wise living is like my estimate of the value of that dog, that is way undervalued? Now, obviously, all of us would recognize there's a value in wise living, but just how valuable is it? I mean, what's the value? Can you be specific? What's it worth? In the midst of discussing the virtues of wisdom with his son, Solomon pauses to emphasize the value of wisdom. He does that in Proverbs chapter 3. I think it would be of value to us to see what Solomon says about the value of wisdom. I'm going to begin reading in verse 13. Solomon says, "Happy is the man who finds wisdom, and the man who gains understanding. For her proceeds are better than the profits of silver, and her gain than fine gold. She is more precious than rubies, and all the things that you may desire cannot compare with her. Length of days is in her right hand, in her left hand riches and honor. Her ways are ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to those who take hold of her, and happy are those who retain her." In this passage, Solomon is extolling the value of wise living. Actually, it can be divided into two parts. In the first part, in verses 13 through 15, he's talking about the value of wisdom. In the second part, he lists some of the virtues, that is, characteristics of wisdom, that make it valuable. So, let's look at the passage, beginning with what Solomon says is its value. Verse 13 says, "Happy is the man who finds wisdom, and the man who gains understanding." Now, clearly, he's saying happy or blessed. We'll look more closely at that word as it appears later in the passage. But happy is the man who finds wisdom and gains understanding. And I think our temptation would be to try to analyze the difference between wisdom and understanding. That's not exactly what's going on here. This is called a Hebrew parallelism, which is nothing more than the fact that a writer of Hebrew poetry could write two sentences back to back, and they were parallel. In this case, it's synonymous parallelism, meaning that the two statements are saying the same thing. They are synonymous. So there's not a lot of difference between finding wisdom and gaining understanding. It's just a poetic way of emphasizing the point that you're really blessed and happy if you find wisdom and understanding. Now, why? Well, he explains. Verse 14 begins with the little word "for." As you've no doubt heard me say before, and will hear me say again, Anytime you see the word for at the beginning of a sentence, especially in the New Testament, it means that the author is about to give you a reason or an explanation for what he has just said. And that's what's happening here. He's about to give us the reason, he says, that wisdom and understanding will make you happy or blessed. He says, for her proceeds are better than the profits of silver. Now, obviously, he's personifying wisdom. He says, for her. Now, he's done that before. He did it in chapter 1. And before he concludes this long introductory section that ends in chapter 9, he will do it again. So you need to know that throughout this passage, Lady Wisdom is our picture. So he says, for her proceeds are better than the profits of silver. Imagine having a truckload of silver and getting profit from that. And he says the proceeds of wisdom are better than the profit from silver. Wow, it's more valuable than silver. Then he says, and her gain than fine gold. Again, imagine a truckload of gold. And the what you would get out of the gold, the gain from the gold, is not as valuable as what you would get out of gaining wisdom. Verse 15, he says, she, that is Lady Wisdom, is more precious than rubies. So, he is really emphasizing the value of wisdom. The word precious here means costly, highly valued, is the very meaning of that Hebrew word. So he's saying wisdom is more valuable than gold and silver and rubies. And if that isn't enough, he says, and all the things you may desire cannot compare to her. Cast your eyes to the end of the earth. Anything that you can see or imagine cannot be compared to the value of wisdom. He is clearly exalting and extolling the excellence and value of wisdom. Let me put it like this. He is saying that wisdom is priceless. It's a priceless treasure, and that it will make you richer than money. Now, that's pretty strong. I want you to imagine that there's a table with two gift-wrapped boxes on it. One box is wrapped in green paper, and the other's wrapped in, say, a sky blue. And let's suppose that you're told that you can only have one box, and in the green box is a billion, spelled with a B, as in boy, dollars. And in the second box, that heavenly blue box, is a pill. If you take the pill, it will make you wise. Now, which one of those two boxes would you choose? Solomon is clearly saying to his son, choose the heavenly blue, sky blue box with the pill. Get wisdom. Is he overstating the case? I mean, think of all that you could buy with money. Houses and cars and clothes and jewelry and food and boats and planes and financial security and financial freedom. Wisdom is more valuable than that. Think of all that you could do to help others. You could build hospitals and schools and have as much money as you'd ever need left over. Wisdom is more valuable than that. Maybe we should ask, exactly what do we get if we take the heavenly blue, sky blue box? What do we get if we get wisdom? Well, that leads us to the second part of the passage where Solomon lists the virtues or the characteristics of wisdom. He lists seven of them. Now, that list is obviously too long for us to look at each one in any great detail, but let's survey the scenery and the situation and see what these characteristics of wisdom are that make it so valuable. In verse 16, he says, length of days is in her right hand. The first virtue or characteristic of wisdom that makes it so valuable is longevity. You'll live longer. Earlier in this chapter, Solomon said that if his son obeyed him, his son would have, quote, length of days and long life, end of quote, added to him. It's in verses 1 and 2. Now, Solomon says that wisdom, without qualifying it as parental obedience, will give a person length of days. One of the virtues of wisdom is longer life. Wow. In my opinion, one of the reasons for that is that a wise life is a less stressful life. You might remember that in the previous reference to length of days in chapter 3, verse 2, Solomon connected living longer with peace. So that I'm going to suggest that the scripture is telling us that if we live a wise life, we'll be at peace. That in modern terms, that's less stressful. And perhaps that is the reason that we live longer. Now, I'm not just squeezing that out of the book of Proverbs. I think it's there, but by inference at least. But clearly, modern researchers have concluded that. They have said those who sleep less than 6 hours a night don't live as long as those who sleep seven or more. Now, what would keep people from sleeping? Dr. Ralph Downey III of Loma Linda University Sleep Disorder Clinic says that the top cause of adult sleeplessness, the top causes, are job stresses and financial worries. Ring true? I think that resonates with most of us. You see, modern science has clearly concluded that stress shortens life. Peace prolongs life. Just as the book of Proverbs suggested. So, one of the virtues of wisdom is longevity. The second is riches. He says in verse 16, in her left hand are riches and honor. Let's take these two separately, and let's take riches first. Though not by name of riches, Solomon has mentioned riches before. He said, if we honored the Lord with the first fruits of our increase, our barns would be filled with plenty. That's in verses 9 and 10 of chapter 3. So, he's saying clearly that if we live a wise life, we'll be richer. Frankly, apart from God's intervention, living wisely will make people wealthier financially. You see, if you live wise financially, you'll save money. The book of Proverbs recognizes that. In chapter 6, Solomon said, go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise, which, having no captain, overseer, or ruler, provides for her supplies in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. Solomon says, look, just look at the ant. She saves in the summer for the hardship of the winter. And he's talking about work and money. So, the book of Proverbs recognizes that if you're living wisely, you're saving money. Now, go talk to people involved in the financial services business, and they will tell you that in a heartbeat. As a matter of fact, my wife and I are involved in the financial services, and we teach a financial seminar entitled, How to Accumulate Wealth on Any Income. In it, we teach what any financial planner will tell you, namely that the key to accumulating wealth is not how much money you make, it's how much money you save. There are numerous stories about people who didn't make much, but they saved, and over time, they became very wealthy. So, living a wise life leads to riches. The second thing in the left hand of Lady Wisdom is honor. In a sense, this virtue has also been mentioned previously. Solomon said that if we practice mercy and truth, we would find favor and high esteem with God and people. He said that earlier in this chapter in verses 3 and 4. The Hebrew word translated honor means abundance, honor, glory. People who live a wise life will have character that will give them a reputation that they will be highly regarded. Now, just forget the book of Proverbs for a minute. Apart from anything spiritual, even, we naturally respect people who live wisely, and we do not respect people who live foolishly. So it should come as no surprise that one of the virtues of wise living is other people will honor you. You know that as well as I do. You know people who've done stupid things and lived foolishly repeatedly, and you do not respect them. And we all know people who are very wise and circumspect in the way they live, and we have much more honor and respect for them. So, one of the virtues of wise living is honor. The fourth is in verse 17. He says, her ways are ways of pleasantness. That's interesting. Wise living is to travel a road of pleasantness, a Hebrew word which means delightfulness. Now let's examine this for just a moment. On the one hand, pleasantness is not just the absence of pain, it is the presence of pleasure. So if I have pleasantness, I'm not just not in pain, I have pleasure. On the other hand, the presence of pleasure does not mean that there is never any pain. Sounds like a contradiction, but bear with me for a minute. The Bible teaches that believers are disciplined by their heavenly Father. Matter of fact, Solomon says that in chapter 3 of Proverbs in verses 11 and 12. Sometimes that discipline involves pain. When the writer to the Hebrews in the New Testament quotes Proverbs chapter 3, verses 11 and 12, he adds that God, quote, scourges every son whom he receives. It's Hebrews chapter 12, verse 6. And then he quickly adds, now no chastening seems to be joyful for the present, but painful. Nevertheless, afterward, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. That's a quote from Hebrews chapter 12, verse 11. Thus, living wisely does not eliminate all pain. It leads to a much more pleasant life. So, by living wisely, I may have to endure some pain. But ultimately, there is pleasantness and peace. As a matter of fact, that's what he says next. He says in verse 17, all her ways are ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are peace. Again, peace was listed with the length of days as a benefit of wisdom back in verse 2. The Hebrew word for peace is shalom. And as I've pointed out before in our study of Proverbs, that Hebrew word means complete, soundness, wellness, health, prosperity, tranquility, contentment. Isn't that interesting? One commentator says that wisdom brings well-being and deep inner satisfaction. So one of the virtues of wisdom is not only this pleasantness, but this inner peace and deep inner satisfaction. And there is another. In verse 18, he says, it's life itself. She, that is wisdom, is a tree of life to those who take hold of her. Wisdom is a tree of life. What does that mean? Well, the tree of life is mentioned at the beginning of the Bible in Genesis chapter 3 and at the end of the Bible in Revelation chapter 21 and again in chapter 22. When Adam and Eve were expelled from the Garden of Eden, they were forbidden access to the tree of life, apparently implying that if they partaken of the tree of life, they would have lived forever, that the tree was the source of life. In the last chapters of the Bible, which describe the New Jerusalem resting on the earth, out of heaven, the tree of life is present, and its leaves are said to be, quote, the healing of the nations, end of quote. Revelation chapter 22, verse 2. The tree of life, then, is the source of life. So in Proverbs, wisdom is a source of life. It says, she is a tree of life. As much as possible, this side of heaven. Wisdom in this life is a source of life that restores and regains in some measure what was lost in the Garden of Eden and will be regained in heaven. What a concept. Let me put it like this. You know from experience that when you make wise decisions, those decisions renew you and energize you. You feel good about yourself and are ready to take on another project because you made the right decision in the last one. On the other hand, when you make stupid decisions, those decisions drain you and depress you. They do me. So, I think Solomon is saying that wisdom is a source of life in the sense that they don't drain you of your energy and depress you, but rather they energize you and renew you. So living a wise life gives you life, a quality of life, as well as a quantity of life. There's one other. The end of verse 18 says, and happy are those who retain her. The last, the seventh virtue mentioned in this passage is happiness. The Hebrew text, this passage begins with the word happy in verse 13, and the last word in the last verse in verse 18 is happy. It begins and ends with happy. So, clearly, Solomon's making a point out of this, that you are happy. What does that mean? Well, the word means to be blessed. In a sense, it summarizes this whole passage, this whole process. If you live wisely, you will be blessed with all these characteristics that we've just listed as being the virtues of wisdom. You will be, in that sense, happy. Not in the sense that modern Americans think of it, is that when my circumstances are going my way, I'm happy, but that I will have an inner peace and pleasantness and joy and, well, blessedness. So, let's put all this together. As I have pointed out, he's talking about the value of wisdom. And he divides the passage into two parts, and one gives the value of wisdom, and the other gives the virtues of wisdom. But putting it together, it's that the virtues or the characteristics of wisdom make it more valuable than anything to which you could compare it. In other words, according to this passage, it's more valuable than gold and silver and rubies, for the simple reason that it will bring you longevity and riches and honor and pleasantness and life and happiness. Let me close by making a couple of observations. For one thing, in our society, we put a premium on wealth. If you value wealth above everything else in life so that you seek it above everything else in life, you may gain it. But you could easily do that and miss out on a lot of life. Remember what Jesus said? Whoever desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake in the Gospels will save it. For what will it profit a man if he gained the whole world and loses his own soul? That's what Jesus said, as recorded in Mark chapter 8. The word soul in that passage, by the way, means life. So Jesus is saying, if you gain the whole world, all the possessions in it, and really lost life, what value would that be? But you can have wisdom and life, and you may or may not have material wealth. Let me make another observation. If you value living wisely above everything else, which means you begin by getting to know the Lord, then you may have money, and you will have things money can't buy. Earlier, I made this a matter of wealth versus wisdom and talking about those two boxes on the table. That is not necessarily the way it is. Oh, you may have wealth and all that it buys without wisdom. But if you have wisdom, you just may have riches and honor and a long life. Now remember, this is the book of Proverbs. These aren't absolute laws. This is a proverbial statement. But the point is, you could have a little of both, or a lot of both. Be that as it may, if you have wisdom, you will have things money can't buy, like peace and happiness and respect. Now, what I need is an illustration. And frankly, I think one of the best illustrations is no less than Solomon himself. Let me read the story to you. It's recorded in the book of 1 Kings, but it's hard to improve on the way it's written. Let me just read it. In that passage, the Lord appears to Solomon in a dream by night and says, "Ask, what shall I give you?" And Solomon says, "You have shown great mercy to your servant David, my father, because he walked before you in truth, in righteousness, and in uprightness of heart with you. You have continued this great kindness for him, and you've given him a son to sit on his throne, as it is this day. Now, O Lord, my God, you have made your servant king instead of my father David, but I am a little child. I do not know how to go out or come in, and your servant is in the midst of your people whom you have chosen, a great people too numerous to be numbered or counted. Therefore, give to your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, that I may discern between good and evil. For he who is able to judge this great people of yours." The speech pleased the Lord, that Solomon had asked for this thing. Then God said to him, "Because you've asked this thing and have not asked for long life for yourself, nor asked riches for yourself, nor asked the life of your enemies, but have asked for yourself understanding to discern justice, behold, I have done according to your words. See, I have given you a wise and understanding heart, so that there has not been anyone like you before, nor shall any like you arise after you. And I have also given you what you've not asked, both riches and honor, so that there will not be anyone like you among the kings of all your days, if you walk in my ways to keep my statutes and my commandments as your father David walked, then I will lengthen your days." That's recorded in 1 Kings chapter 3. Solomon selected wisdom and sought it from the Lord, and he got it and riches and honor and a long life besides. One other observation. If it is wisdom you desire, it is not exactly as easy as picking a box off a table. You must seek wisdom. Granted, it begins with asking that the Lord give it to you. James tells us, if any man lacks wisdom, let him ask of God who gives liberally. It's in James chapter 1. But you also must put forth some effort to search it out in God's Word, and you must practice it when you find it. Look at Proverbs 3:18 one more time. It says, she, that is wisdom, is the tree of life to those who take hold of her, and happy are all who retain her. The Hebrew word translated take hold comes from a single Hebrew verb, which means to take hold, to seize, to grasp. Actually, it comes from a word for firm or strong. The idea is to seize firmly, to fasten onto, to bind. The Hebrew word translated retain in verse 18 means to grasp, to support. But it can be translated hold firmly. In other words, Solomon is picturing wisdom as a woman and telling his son to grab her firmly and hold on tightly. A better illustration than taking a box off of a table full of wisdom is a woman named Wisdom with longevity in her right hand, riches and honor in her left hand, and pleasantness, peace, refreshment, and happiness in walking with her through life. Grab her and don't let her go. My wife and I have an expression that we would like to characterize our relationship. We talk about being joined at the hip. What we have in mind is that we go everywhere together. When we do that, there's so much pleasantness and peace and refreshment and happiness for each of us that when we're together, we don't like to ever think about being apart. That's what Solomon is telling his son about Lady Wisdom. When you experience wise living, you will feel that way about Lady Wisdom. To get her, you need to be joined at the hip. And you need to stay joined at the hip. Grab her and hold her and hang on to her. For she's more valuable than anything else you can imagine.